I'll have to pay her later for that one. Hi, everyone. My name is Robin Little, and I am an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is January 26, 2002, and my home group is the Central Group. And I am so glad to be here. And I'm nervous, and I've already started shaking. I started shaking on the way here. I used to cut hair, and I used to shake, too. And I used to tell people, now, don't let that scare you. It runs in my family, you know. And, of course, back then, I didn't think vodka smelled. So, of course, you know, they couldn't smell the vodka on me. But anyways. I am so glad to be here. It's so wonderful to see everybody out here. And, 6 years ago, I came to my first convention here, and I never dreamt that I'd be standing up here. I better get Kleenex from Hardy. This is going to be scary. My eyes are all swollen. I've cried all weekend. I haven't cried because I've been sad. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me an opportunity. It's an opportunity. I used to cry all the time because I was so sad. And today I cry because I'm so happy. I mean, I cry for tears of gratitude. So if you're new, get ready. Get ready. I'd just like to say a little prayer because I'm shaking so bad I thought maybe that might help. I have prayed, I have peed, I have prayed, and I have peed. So I've tried. I was praying in the bathroom and the toilet paper guy came in and he said, I'm here to change the toilet paper. And I said, I'm praying. I'm sure he was wondering, what the heck is going on? Ooh, I am shaking. I just want to read this little prayer. It's one of my favorites, and it goes like this. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, may I bring love, that where there is wrong, may I bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, may I bring harmony, that where there is error, may I bring truth, that where there is doubt, may I bring faith, that where there is despair, may I bring hope. That where there are shadows, may I bring light. That where there is sadness, may I bring joy. Lord, grant me that I may seek to comfort rather than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. And, before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can promise you that was not my goal, okay? Well, not my goal. I wanted you to be loving me. I wanted you to be forgiving me. I wanted you to be thinking about me. It was all about me. And, I want to make sure that I talk about what my life's like now because I really never know what I'm going to say, you know. All night last night, my brain was thinking the committees were up there. We were busy, about 500 of them, all of you in my head. Can you imagine? Scary. And I kept saying, shut up. There's nothing to think about. God's in charge, you know. God's in charge. So we'll see what God's got in store. I've stopped shaking a little bit as it's going away, but... my life is so different now, and I owe it all to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I believe, you know, this is just my opinion, but AA comes first in my life, then God, because see, without AA, I forget about God. Then my girls, the women in my life, and before I got here, I really wanted nothing to do with you women. You were either going to try to steal my man or you wanted my outfits, you know. And then my family, and then my husband gets to sneak in there, and then work and on and on. And before I got to AA, you know, that's definitely not the order. On one, I definitely didn't want to be in AA. And, you know, I'd done so many terrible things. God really wasn't interested in me. And my family was very disappointed. And really, my quest was just to find a husband. So I don't know if any of you can relate, but, you know, that was my quest. So the order of priorities have changed. And, you know, I am so fortunate that when I got here, finally willing, because, my sobriety date is not the first one I've had. I am one of those people that, you know, I didn't pick up my first white chip and get this thing. I had to experience alcoholism to get here. And, I had to do all the things they say and more about alcoholism in order to get here and be willing. And I'm glad for that. I'm glad I drank every drink I drank. And, by being somebody that just didn't get it, it has become my greatest gift, because when someone goes out, I'm there. And I can go to them and say, I know what it feels like. I know the embarrassment and the incomprehensible demoralization of going to Alcoholics Anonymous, being given such a wonderful gift, and then going out and drinking again. It is awful. And so if you haven't experienced that, I am so glad for you that you haven't had to. I'm glad you came in willing. And if you're like me, well, you know, just stay. Liz isn't here today, and I am so fortunate that, you know, I get to be here. And one of the things when I heard her speak several years ago is she didn't say, keep coming back. She said, stay. So just stay, you know, just stay. And let's keep her in our prayers. I also wanted to make sure to thank the committee for inviting me. And Lee, thank you. And Ann, thank you. I love you, Ann. There's a lot of people that have worked very, very hard to put this together. And, you know, I just want to thank you all for your hard work. But I know for me that service and being involved is what keeps me here, you know. And all the speakers this weekend have talked about being in the middle, you know, being in the middle. And my whole life, I was never in the middle. I might have been there, but I didn't feel like I was there. I always felt like I was on the outside. And I'm very fortunate that when I came in, I got a sponsor, and I had said to her, you know, I've already worked the first three steps. I'm ready to get started on four. And I am so glad she reminded me that I was not the sponsor, you know. And, you know, everybody is, I've heard a lot of the long-timers and the long-timers, they don't want to be old-timers. I've heard them, and I am so grateful for you, too. I am so grateful that I can aspire someday to be up here in my walker or whatever I need. You know, my sponsee's driving me and taking care of me. I hope I'm here. I hope I'm here when I'm 80. And the most important part is I just hope when I do go, I go sober. But anyways, I'm supposed to tell you a little bit about what it's like, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And Sandy B, he always shares that the longer he's sober, the better his childhood got. And, you know, that is true. It is so true for me. You know, maybe the first year I spoke, I spent most of the time speaking about how awful my father was to me. I mean, I just did. I was so consumed with my father. And I'm going to share about my father because it's very, very important. It has driven my life. Driven my life. It still drives my life, but not as much, you know. And I always say I was born irritable, restless, and discontent, because that is true. I was born on New Year's Eve. And if you are born in December, my birthday was December 31st, and if you are born in the months of December and January, you know what I'm talking about. It's called Christmas Birthday Combo Gift. So I was born wanting more, born feeling cheated, you know. I did, you know. I remember going to school, and I didn't get to get cupcakes because we were on vacation. And, you know, I remember my aunt saying, oh, and by the way, here's the, you know, in the little handles, and you had the separate, like, sack that went in the purse, the preppy stuff. And she'd say, the handle's for your birthday, and this is for Christmas, you know. Of course, in November, she'd give my sister the complete purse. You know, so I was always bent out of shape. And, well, I'll share with you, my sister has been out of shape at her. I was bent out of shape at everybody. You know, and I truly believe that this is a disease of perception. I saw the world differently. And I am so glad that today I see the world differently, too. You know, I don't see the world the same way I did before I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was reborn. I was reborn when I did that. But anyways, I was raised in Michigan, and I am the middle child, so I also have middle child problems. And my dad was an alcoholic, so, you know, I got all the hang-ups and, you know, all the excuses to be the victim. And anyways, you know, I grew up in this crazy family, and my dad, we were middle class, and we had a nice home, and we dressed nice, and so everything looked good. You know, and I was taught, I've heard a few people say, you know, before you leave, put the smile on and don't tell anybody what the heck's going on in our house. And it was just a secret, you know. But things weren't good in my house, you know. My dad drank every night when he came home. He got up in the morning, he put on his beautiful blue suit, and off he went. And he came home, and we never knew what was going to happen. We had a pretty good idea it wasn't going to be a good night, because he'd pull out the bottle of rum, and he'd start drinking. Now, my mom always said the best way to get a drunk to go to sleep is to feed him, and so we were always hoping for early dinner time. But, you know, he was a drinker, and he was mean, and, you know, I had this perception that he didn't like me. Me, just me. He didn't really like any of us, you know. But when I look at things now, you know, for God's sakes, he was 30-some years old. He had 4 children. He had a very stressful job. He was trying to be somebody. He had all this baggage he had brought with him. You know, he was married to my mom, that was the queen of denial. And today she will still say, and what's wrong with being in denial? You know, what is wrong with that? Nothing, Mom, you know. But I grew up in this family, this crazy family, and, you know, he worked all day, and then he came home and got drunk, and, you know, when you get all wasted, you know, things happen. And, you know, he was violent, and he was angry, and I always seemed to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. I was always the one that got the brunt. And, you know, several years ago, my older brother called me, and he'd had a couple Chardonnays. And because remember, Shaken runs in my family. And he'd had a couple Chardonnays, and he said, I am so sorry, Robin. And I said, what? And he said, I am so sorry that I never protected you from Dad. He said, have you ever forgiven him for that, you know, now that you're at that AA place? And I said, you know, Dad was a sick man. And my dad was a sick man. And my dad loved me the best he was capable of loving me. And I know that my dad, you know, probably grew up in the same environment. The truth is he did. His was probably worse. And as I share, you know, that mine is, my childhood looks wonderful compared to many stories that I hear. You know, and I have the opportunity to sponsor women, and I hear the stories, and, you know, my childhood was the Beaver Cleavers. We were okay, crazy as can be, but I guess everything was all right. I survived. You know, we all survived. And, you know, my dad taught me a lot of good things. And I really believe I've, you know, I used to wonder, why would God let all that happen to me, you know? Why would God give me a daddy that didn't love me? You know, but the truth is, God gave me this beautiful mother that she loved me so much. And she told me every day how beautiful I was and that I could be anybody I wanted to be. He gave me a beautiful grandmother that loved me and I always felt safe. Now, she did used to pay me $20 to clean the bathroom, which is a lot of money. And I didn't realize that the reason she was doing that is I drove her nuts. She would send me she'd say, clean the bathroom, stay about 5 hours, you know. But she loved me. And, you know, she gave me a wonderful aunt. And she gave me this wonderful uncle. And I remember my uncle used to tell me, I love you, Robbie Dobby Doo. And I would think, you are weird. You know, when he'd want to hug me, I'd think, there is something wrong with you. You know, my ideas and my perception of the world was all screwed up. And I was focused on the fact that my daddy didn't love me, you know, and my daddy did. And I didn't see all the good things God was giving me. I wasn't interested in the good. I was interested in only looking at what was missing from my life, because it was all about me. Now, of course, I didn't know any of this. You know, that's the greatest thing, you know. You don't know until you know. And I didn't know. And so anyways, I grew up in this crazy family, and life went on just like it does. And, you know, everybody, alcohol was always prevalent in my home. If you go to a family function and you see any of the pictures, you know, there is a beer bottle, a champagne bottle. There's booze everywhere. We drank. That was what we did. Catholic, Polish, you know, whatever. Crazy. And drinking was just a normal part of life. And so I don't remember my first drink. I don't. Because we drank all the time. I do remember that my grandmother always made cream de mint sundaes. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a cream de mint sundae, but when you're about 5, they are delicious. And if your brothers and sisters and cousins don't like theirs, you can lick their dish too. Now, you don't think I licked their dish, do you? I did. I liked it. I love NyQuil. So there's a sign there. And I was always sipping off of everybody's drink. I do remember getting buzzed. My mom liked slow gin fizzes. And I do remember drinking that and catching a buzz. Later on in life, I would like slow gin fizzes with vodka. No fizz. But, you know, I remember that. And then I just started drinking, like, you know, with the older kids. I've been this tall. I'm not very tall. My last name was Tall Man. And I've been this tall since I was 9 or 10. So I'm really short now, and my last name is Little. Oxymoron there. But I was really tall, and I was developed, and so the boys liked me, and I liked that the boys liked me. And, you know, I was thinking last night as I was telling the committee to be quiet, you know, I was always popular in school. People always liked me. I always had friends all around me. You know, if there was a pretty girl, I won that contest. And if there was, you know, like a homecoming, we had in junior high the homecoming court, I was on that. But, you know, I never felt a part of. I never felt good enough. And it isn't that anybody told me I wasn't. You know, my dad might have, and I guess, again, that's what I focused on. But I always had people in my life that loved and cared about me. I just didn't see them. I just wanted something else. I don't know what it was. But anyways, you know, I went to school, and I drank, and I partied with everybody else. I've always drank alcoholically. I never had one and put it down. I always drank to get drunk. You know, we could drink in our house. My parents always said, I'd rather have you drinking at home so at least we know where the hell you are. And so my house was a place to hang. And my dad was in sales, and back then they used to give you a lot of booze at Christmas and stuff. He'd get baskets, and he used to get Crown Royal, you know, which comes in the purple bag, which is really great because when you're drinking it, they can't see what's in there and what's not. And he used to go on the wagon. You know, so he'd go on the wagon for a year or whatever. He didn't come to A, but he'd go on the wagon. And I remember one year we drank like 9 of those Crown Royals. But it worked out great because we just put the purple bag on. He's not drinking anymore. He'll never know. Well, the day came where he wanted to drink, right? And he went to the Crown Royal, and there was nothing there. But, of course, being a good alcoholic, I blamed it on my brothers. And, you know, I was good. I wouldn't do something like that, you know, drink all that. But anyways, you know, I just drank and partied like everybody else. You know, boys came in about 8th grade, and, you know, I learned that I wanted them. I wanted them all. I didn't know which one I wanted, but I just wanted one. And then when I got one, I didn't want him. I wanted somebody else's. And, you know, what a nightmare. I mean, I am addicted to alcohol, drugs, men, shopping, food, more. Just give me more. And then once you give it to me, I don't like it. I don't want it. I want something else. You know, I don't know if you can relate to that or not. But anyways, you know, I went to school. My parents moved to South America. I went with them. I was devastated. How dare you take me away? And what a great place to send someone like me, where you either have so much money, which I never had experienced, or you have none. There is no drinking age. And the other stuff is plentiful. And I spent a year there it's a miracle I'm alive, you know. I mean, they have machine guns there. And, I mean, it is not a place for someone like me to be hitchhiking all over the city. I supposedly went to school. I don't really recall that, but it doesn't really matter. Anyways, I came back, and I didn't belong anymore. You know, life had gone on, and, you know, and then the drinking just continued. I just drank. I was a teenage alcoholic. Now, I didn't get here until I was 38 when I was ready, but I was a teenager. I could have came here at 17 and been ready and done. But, you know, I was too young to be an alcoholic. I went away to college. My dream was always to be a hairdresser. I really, really wanted to be a hairdresser. I had an aunt that was a hairdresser. And, you know, my dad said not very nice things about hairdressers. So if you're here, it's okay. Your profession is good. But it's what I really wanted to do. And he kept telling me, you've got to go to college. You have to have a degree. You'll never survive. And so I went away to school to become an engineer. Now, hairdressing, engineering, I'm not very good in math, but my dad was an engineer, and I just wanted him to like me. And I went to school, and of course, you know, I majored not in engineering, I majored in drinking. And I love to drink in Boise. And there was lots going on there. And within, I think, a year and a half, my college education was over. I had failed the final class. When you can't pass racquetball and the old man's paying the bill, he's not happy. And he told me, you know, I won't pay for school anymore, but you can go get a trade. And so I went to beauty school, and I became a hairdresser. And, you know, I was drinking like a fish, and things weren't good, and the world was awful, and on and on and on. And so I knew how to fix that. I would find a nice man. And there was a guy, I worked at a bar, and I really liked him, except he really liked my girlfriend, of course. You know, it's always like that. But he had a brother that I didn't really like, but, you know, hey, he'd work. You know, I'm just looking at a commitment for life, right? And so I found it, and it was perfect. My dad was going to really like him. I don't know if you ever did this or not, but he had a trailer, he had a daughter, and he had a wife. And if you want to talk about making your dad happy after you've just failed out of college, it's a great way to do it. Sorry, Dad. So I got involved with this guy, and he wasn't living with his wife, so that worked enough for me. But I had a ready-made family, and I had my own apartment, and he had his, and I thought, well, you know, what a great way to save money is if we move in together. And just so you know, you never save money moving in with somebody. It always costs more, especially if he really doesn't like to work. Now, I don't know if any of you like those kind of guys, but I like those kind of guys. And I thought I liked them because I could help them. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I found I picked them so I could abuse them. See, I was going to end up becoming an abuser just like my dad. You know, I was going to end up becoming the man I hated most in the world. At the end, I would be him. And anyways, I spent 10 years with this poor soul. There's a lot of poor souls, but he was one. And, you know, I took care of him and took care of the daughter and whatever. You know, I just thought I was great and wonderful and I wasn't. And I drank, and we did many, many things. You know, drugs are a part of my story, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about them, but I can tell you when I got to Florida, I weighed 80 pounds. I had called my mom many, many times and telling her, they've turned the electric off again, Mom, and it's cold here. You know, I am ashamed to tell you that there were many days that little girl didn't get food, because I was more concerned with other things. And thank God for returnable bottles, because that's often how she got a burger. You know, I would say, oh, my God, we didn't feed her. You know, and we had no money left because, of course, we did whatever the night before, and I would take that money and take those bottles and get her something to eat. You know, and just like my dad, you know, consumed with me, consumed with what was going on in my life, and I was going to start to destroy somebody else's. And I didn't mean to. I didn't even think about it. You know, I didn't even think about it. It was all about me. Me trying to get more of whatever I didn't get. And once I got it, I didn't want it. And I wanted something else. You know, my life story. I moved to Florida and moved in with my parents. And my dad had gotten sober. He'd gone to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was sober. And God blessed that man. God gave him a great gift. He sent him me. 80 pounds, so I was a little messed up, if you figure that one out. And then he sent my brother, and we moved in with him, and it was great. They had a beautiful home, and it was like one of those U-shaped, and it had the pool, and I'd get naked and float around, and, you know, my poor dad would come home, and there I'd be all buzzed up. I'm on vacation. I mean, Florida, for God's sakes, and they got this great house. I mean, I think I'm going to stay forever. And that didn't last long, and my dad first got, he told me if I couldn't find my own job, he'd get me one, and so I already knew what kind of job he was going to be. I mean, I did go to college for a short time, and, you know, I could be the vice president of his company, and, you know, I had it all planned what he was going to get for me, and he got me a little job in Sanford, you know, serving eggs at 5 a.m., and you don't make a lot of money doing that, and I was very disappointed in what he, you know, aspired for me. I mean, at least, it's not vice president, manager of something, you know, making $100,000. It seemed appropriate to me. But anyways, I ended up getting a job doing hair, and I met a girl that on an airplane that drank just like me, and she was a bartender, and so that worked out really, really good. And we partied every night after work, and I would come home, and my dad would say to me, it is a matter of time, honey, before you get a DUI. And I said, I'm not drinking. It's not a big deal. We just partied a little bit. And the day came, and I got the DUI. And not only did I get a DUI, I was driving in a blackout, and I ran in the back of a vehicle, and I left the scene. You know, if I'm going to do it, I do it right. And left the scene, and this gentleman, those people left because they were probably buzzed up, too, because I was in the bad part of the town. I was in the hood. And this guy didn't think it was very appropriate to have, like, me on the road driving, and so he got me off the road, and I offered a little service to keep him quiet. And I don't remember this, but he had no problem telling the judge. You know, and he's about this big and hairy and, But, you know, I didn't want to go to jail, and sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And so I offered what I have to offer, and that's, you know what it is. But anyways, I got the DUI. But, you know, sometimes I have learned through experience that sometimes the worst days of my life end up becoming my greatest. And I got that DUI, and I went to the lawyer, and the lawyer told me, one, I should probably try to find my car because I didn't know where it was, and that things had changed, and, you know, the laws had changed, you know, and I could be facing a year in prison for running in the back of somebody's car and leaving the scene. And my blood alcohol was like 2 point something, and I hadn't seen the videotape, but he had. You know, and in the video, I'm turning the guy's machine off, and I'm screaming things like, I don't do that other stuff anymore. All I did was drink. You know, I didn't eat all day. You know, the excuses, whatever the excuses are. You know, I must have drank a scotch instead of Chardonnay, you know, whatever. But, and he told me I should go to AA. Well, I came home, and my dad was ecstatic. He was, you know, he knew I was in trouble. He knew I was ready to live his life. And, you know, it happens to me all the times when I meet, you know, I get new girls that come in and I'm like, oh, I hope you get it. I hope you stay. And he was so excited, and he called a friend of ours, and they took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he and I finally had a common bond. You know, this was going to be the opportunity for me to finally have a relationship with my dad. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lady, she's in the big heaven, the big meeting in the sky, and just a few years ago I saw her at a convention, and she said, do you remember, I was your first sponsor. And I said, what? And she said, well, when you went to AA, I was your sponsor. And I'm like, you were? And she's like, yeah, you know, you used to come over. And I'm like, I did. And she's like, yeah. And she said to my husband, but she always kind of seemed to be in a fog. And I said to her, that's because I was wasted. See, it's hard to go to AA and get anything, and even know you got a sponsor if you're wasted. And that's what I did. I went to Tuesdays and Thursdays. I met a guy as soon as I got there because they would help me with my spiritual condition. And we go to the meeting, and supposedly I got a sponsor. I don't even remember her, so, you know. And then we would go to the meeting, and then after the meeting, we'd go to JB Sports Bar, and we would drink beers and talk about how crazy you all are and how together we had it and, you know, all our dreams and aspirations of what we were going to be. And but with my dad, I would go home and tell him I went to the meeting, and I would talk about it, and he would talk to me, and, you know, and I lied. You know, I just lied and lied and lied and lied to that man. And, you know, everybody else in the family knew I was drinking, and so did he. But I didn't think he knew. You know, I didn't think he knew. And so my, you know, time went on, and that's what I did. And I went to AA, and I drank. Obviously, I didn't work the steps, and obviously, I didn't find God. And, you know, I just drank and party, whatever. And I lied to this man. And in July of that year, I got a phone call. He had died. He was fishing in Michigan, and he was never a very good fisherman, and he caught a fish, and he said, there's actually a effing fish in Lake Michigan, and he sat down, he smiled, and he died. He died sober. He died sober. But I knew that I had been lying to that man all those years, that year. I also was happy he was gone. Because now I could drink like I wanted. And it was all about me. My daddy had died. So I came to Michigan, quit my job, and I went on a 3-month drink fest. And, you know, I would like to tell you that I was at the funeral and I was helpful to my mom. I wish I could tell you that I was supportive to my little sister who lost her daddy that she loved so much. I wish I could tell you I was a lady with a little bit of dignity, but it isn't true. I got drunk every single day. I cried and whined about my daddy. That's when that song came out about where somebody dies and then you have a baby and, you know, whatever. It was a song about somebody's father, you know, so I would play that over and over again. And, you know, I, of course, got as much sympathy as I possibly can from the men. And, I rocked my poor mom's world. And I ended up coming back to Michigan and, I mean, to Florida. And, that guy that I'd been with 10 years, of course, I had brought him to Florida eventually. And, you know, he had met somebody, and he was, because, of course, you know, once I have what I have, I don't want what I want. And he'd kind of met somebody, and I got really depressed. And on New Year's Eve, what a great time. I come in on New Year's Eve. I might as well go out on New Year's Eve. I tried to kill myself. And I wasn't successful. I wasn't successful at anything, you know, is what I thought. And I ended up going to treatment, and, you know, my mom had told me she had had it. She had had it with me, and I needed to get help. And so I went to treatment, and, you know, I got everybody else better. I was there a week. That's all I needed. I didn't need 28 days. And there's people with problems. You know, there's some men that need belts, and there's a girl that's got a mental illness. And, you know, it was all about helping other people, and nothing about the fact that I had a drinking problem, really. But it cost my mom a fortune, because when you try to kill yourself, your insurance cancels you, whatever happened, and I had no insurance, and she got the tab. And she wasn't real excited. Yeah, she had a look just like that of, oh, my God, it costs how much? And I'm grateful she paid that tab, because the fear of her kept me not drinking for 5 years. For 5 years, I didn't drink. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sponsor. There was a lady that the basket was going around, and she goes, when I first got here, I always wanted to take some money out. And I'm like, I like you. And she became my sponsor, and I supposedly worked the steps. I don't really recall it, so I don't know. And one of the speakers was sharing about the marijuana maintenance plan. That might have been why. I don't remember a whole lot. But, you know, I didn't change anything. I still was with the same man. I still went to the bar every night and drank Diet Coke. I smoked dope on a daily basis. And I never got the idea of God, only for a short moment. First 6 months, I meet this guy. I'm a Catholic. He's a Baptist. I want him. So I joined the Baptist church. And I talk all about God. God love you. God bless you. God. Everybody's like, who is she? And that was my only moment with God until he dumped me, and, you know, that was it. And but I stayed sober. I didn't drink. Sober wasn't there. I just didn't drink. And my life got better. You know, I kept my job, and I went back to school, and I got my degree, and I met a really nice, got rid of Turkey Lurk, and got myself a nice man, and things were really good for me. You know, and I was thinking last night, since it's a woman's meeting, then I'll share that, because, you know, the turning point for me was before I got rid of that man, I'd been with him 10 years, I never thought I could have kids, because I never used birth control, and I never got pregnant. And I was sober about 2 years, and I got pregnant. My sister said, I think I'm pregnant. And I said, oh, my God, you need to go get a test. And they had 2-for-1, and she said, I'm scared. And I said, well, I'll take one with you. She wasn't pregnant, and I was. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, I always wanted kids. I loved kids. And I was sober, and I was getting ready to graduate from college, and I had a really good job lined up. And, you know, I called my sponsor, this lady. I was still talking to her. I told her what was going on, and we discussed the options. And, you know, the option was to get rid of the baby. Because he said to me, I don't want a baby. I am not interested in having a baby. I don't want one. I already got one I don't want. And I started to think, do I want to bring a baby in the world that's got a daddy that doesn't want her? Because, see, I'd had a daddy that didn't want me. And so I said to God, this is totally against my morals and what I believe in, but if it's supposed to happen, give me a sign. And if it isn't, give me a sign. And so I went, and that was back when they picketed. I don't know if they're still picketing or not, but they were picketing. And I'm like, maybe that's the sign. Now, I never called my mom and said, Mom, I'm pregnant, and I need your help. I was too embarrassed. Too embarrassed because I was going to go do what I was going to do. And I went there, and everything was done, whatever, and they were getting ready, and they said it was too soon. So there was the sign from God. But I didn't listen. And so I was back a week later, and I never, ever, ever hated myself more than I did that day. And, you know, for a year I didn't talk to my mom. She would call, I would hang up. She would call my sister and say, what's wrong with her? And I just hated myself so much because I was so selfish. I took that life. And my mom did never had the opportunity. And thank God, because she had all four of us. And, you know, I really believe that's why I drank again. I drank again, one, because I wasn't an Alcoholics Anonymous. But the other reason is I knew God hated me so much for what I had done. You know, and I hated me too. And thank God for the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I don't hate myself for that anymore. And that has become one of my greatest gifts. Because when a girl shares with me that she had the same experience, I can look her in the eye and say, I did it too. I understand. You know, my worst day again becomes my greatest. You know, my worst day again becomes my greatest. And so I don't know why I was supposed to share that, but that one came out. And so, anyways, I ended up drinking again. You know, and they say in the book, if you do not have a spiritual defense against first drink, you know, you're going to drink. And that's what happened. My life was good. I had my family in my life. I had a niece that loved me. I could take her. You know, everything was wonderful. And I drank again. We were on vacation. He was drinking a big beer. And this new one. He was having a new drinking a beer. And I looked at him. And I said, would you pull over? And he said, what for? And I said, it's none of your business. I'm 32 years old. I've done my four step. I've gotten over my issues with my father. And I can drink. And I picked up the drink. And it gets worse, never better. And the disease of alcoholism just continues to thrive. And the next 6 years, I learned all about, more about alcoholism. When I got here, I had alcoholism. On that day I drank, I didn't think I had it. I thought I was cured. And so we are never cured. I didn't let my family know I was drinking because I knew they were not going to be happy about it. And I started drinking, and at first it was just a couple glasses of wine, you know, or a beer, because, you know, I'm not going to drink liquor, because only alcoholics drink liquor. And I had a bottle of gin that I'd had in my house forever that I always said I couldn't be an alcoholic because I never drank it. And the reason I never drank it is I puked it for 5 days one time. And, you know, once you do that, it is really hard to drink it again. But anyways, I had a really good job. And I started drinking, and you know, when you start drinking, you know, within 2 or 3 weeks, I was history. I was drinking all the time, blacking out, doing things I didn't mean to do. You know, I was going into work all hungover and angry. God damn it, why don't they do what I want them to do? You know, and I stunk. I didn't think vodka smelled. It smells. And my boss knew I was in AA before because, you know, I used to tell people. I go to AA. I don't drink. I go to A, I don't drink. And so he said to me, are you drinking again? And of course I looked at him and said, absolutely not, I am offended. And, you know, I lost that really good job. I mean, I had my own little license plate, and you know, I mean, it was an opportunity of a lifetime and I was going to destroy it. And I lost that job, and I eventually drove that poor man away, and then I just lived 6 years of hell. Of hell, getting up every morning saying, I'm not going to do it again. Doing it anyways, running from job to job. I mean, as my mom says, your resume is frightening. You know, because I have had so many different jobs. I got a bachelor's in marketing, and then I decided I want to be a teacher because men like teachers. I could get a nice man. They like teachers. Well, yes, they like sober teachers. They don't like drunk teachers. You know, and I got my master's in teaching, and then I sold people. I mean, I just did all kinds of crazy stuff. I could not keep a job. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't quit drinking. This little niece I had that loved me and adored me had become afraid of me. She didn't want to stay with Aunt Robbie anymore. You know, my friends were coming to me and begging me, please quit drinking. They knew me when I drank. They knew me when I didn't drink. And they got to meet me as I had progressed. And I would say, F you. You don't like the way I drink? You drink as much. I don't need to be your friend. And before you know it, at the end, which I heard so many women share, I ended up in the chair all by myself with several bottles of Chardonnay a night. And, you know, I went from store to store to get my drinks, because, of course, I didn't want anybody to know I was an alcoholic, even though you could just look at me and see I had a drinking problem. I mean, I'm all bloated. I stink. You know, I stink. And the one lady sharing about the clean underwear, I didn't wear underwear. But bathing wasn't really necessarily anything I was interested in. You know, I was just interested in quitting to feel so awful about who I was and what I had become. And but the only thing I knew how to do was drink. I mean, that's just all I knew how to do, and that's what I did. And on January 25th, you know, I started drinking after work. I went to a client's house. I was selling houses then, and went to the client's house, and she said, "Would you like a whiskey?" And, you know, I said, "Sure." You know? And that night was going to be my last night, but I got to share one other thing, you know, about the people we harm. You know, I destroyed the people I love. That's who you hurt most, my mom, my sister. I mean, everybody was so embarrassed of me. I wasn't getting invited to weddings. Nobody asked me to come to their party. You know, nobody wanted to be with me anymore. I was sick. I was sick and awful, and it was disgusting. And I knew the only thing that would help me was a man. And I couldn't get a man, because no decent man wanted to be with a woman like me, because I was terrible. But there was a guy that really liked me. He was my friend. And I just got to share the story, because that poor soul, he loved me. You know, he loved me even though I was so sick, because he remembered when I didn't drink and what a decent woman I sort of was. And so he moved me in, and he told me we'd get married. And I think we had sex, and I told him, "If I have sex with you, then, you know, you got to buy me a diamond. And I need a little payment." I didn't know I could make lots of money doing that. Now I know. But, you know, and I moved in with him, and he made the biggest mistake of his life. He said, "You don't have to work." And, oh, my God, I could drink all day, you know. And that's what I did, and I ruined that man's life. And he told me to, in July, I was sharing with the girls, you know, I woke up and all the rubber was off my tires. I was in a parking lot. But I had started the prayer, "Dear God, help me. Things are getting bad. I need you. I think I'm going to have to go to jail. You know, do whatever you got to do, God, but please help me, God." I knew God was there. I was in so much trouble. But see, God doesn't necessarily answer my prayers when I think he should. He answers them when it's his time. And so I destroyed that man's life. He ended up going to, he called my mom and dad that day. He found me with no rubber on my tires, and told on me. And I was very, very angry. And then he told me he was going to Al-Anon. And I'm telling you what, you Al-Anon, I love you guys. God bless you that you love people like me. God bless you. He went to Al-Anon. I called him every name in the book, what a loser he was. You know, I didn't have a drinking problem. And he told me if I did not go to AA, that we weren't getting married. And, you know, I needed to get married. I was in trouble. And so I went to AA. I used to get Slurpees. I don't know if you know about this, but Slurpees and vodka worked very appropriate at a men's AA meeting. And so I found a men's AA meeting. I did. There were about 8 guys that sat around, and I would go. I would share immediately about my problems. I married this guy. He's going to Al-Anon. I'm sober. I cannot believe it. Of course, I got a vodka and Slurpee. And, you know, those men never kicked me out. I didn't stay long. You know, I stayed long enough to share and tell my problem, cry a little bit, and then leave. But I will tell you, those are the men that started to plant the seed of Alcoholics Anonymous again in my life. And then it just got bad. And so it was Andy's fault, poor guy. And I left him. And I got a new apartment. Everything was going to be great and wonderful. And I was going to exercise. And there's a lady in the audience. I remember I quit. And I saw her at a dinner party. And I said, I knew she was, you know, friend of Bill W's. And I said to her, "I'm a friend of Bill W's." Of course, I'm wasted, right? But I'm an old friend. I'm an old friend. And it took me from July to January, going in and out of AA, to finally surrender. I just had to drink a little bit more. I had to be convinced. And what I have discovered now that I've been here a while is what I wasn't convinced of. I was convinced I was an alcoholic in my heart of hearts. But the idea that I could drink like other people had not been smashed. That was the key that had been missing all these years. The idea that I could drink like other people had to be smashed. This is the first step of recovery. I never knew that. And so I had to drink enough and isolate enough and remove everybody from my life enough to know I couldn't drink a glass of Chardonnay like my sister. And, you know, I don't know why the hell I had to beat myself up so bad to get there, but I had to drink every drink I drank. And I woke up on January 26th, naked. I always woke up naked for some reason. Naked, missing shoes, cut up, whatever. And my door was open, and I had this little dog. She was sitting there looking at me, and was looking at me, and I was all cut up and beat up, you know. I mean, the door was open, the cabinets were torn off, and I knew that a group of men must have come in and raped me. I mean, how could I have gotten in that kind of shape? And I was walking, and all of a sudden I caught myself, that moment of clarity, at the mirror. And I saw who I was. It was me, the drunk. And there hadn't been a single man in my home. There had been nobody but me and my dog. I had become my father. And the gig was up. And I got on my knees and I asked God to help me. And I've been here ever since. The worst day of my life became the greatest. And you know, I came here and I got a sponsor, the one I already told I'd worked the first three steps that morning, you know, in my bathroom, and thank God she told me that, you know, she was the sponsor. Now, I always share with my girls a couple years after I was sober, I was sponsoring a girl, and she kept telling me she was incapable of being honest. She was hung up on that, baby. And I said to God, please help me. I don't know what to do. You know, I talked to my sponsor and stuff, and so I was looking through my closet, and I found my first 30-day journal. And, wow, I was a mess. It says things like, I went to the meeting today. I could not have eye contact. I looked up and looked at one person. You know, I am so scared. I am so afraid. Someday, maybe I'll get a friend and I'll belong. I went to the meeting. I stacked chairs. I emptied ashtrays. I grew very uncomfortable and I left. And it goes on to talk about that. Then it says, I got a sponsor. Her name's Christina. Her name's Kathleen, by the way. But her name was Christina the first 30 days I was sober. And, see, God waited 2 years because he knew my ego wouldn't have been able to handle the fact that I didn't know my sponsor's name. She says, you don't need to know your sponsor's name. All you need to do is work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, but it talks about that. And then, of course, it talks about men. I saw this man. I talked to this man. I am not talking to any of you women, okay, because you want my stuff. But then it says, I get the sponsor, then it goes, I got to the meeting 15 minutes early. And then I talked to a girl. And then it says, and after the meeting I stayed 15 minutes. I grew extremely uncomfortable and left. But no one shot me. So she had already told me what I needed to do. Get there 15 minutes early, stay 15 minutes late, and I promise no one will shoot you. And that became her line. I promise no one will shoot you, and I promise you won't die. And she is correct. I haven't been shot, and nobody's killed me yet. I am married, so you never know. But anyways, Lee, how long do I have? I don't know. I'm just going to talk. So I got sober at least, thank God. But anyways, I got a sponsor. I worked the steps, and my life got different. It got so good. I mean, And I got in the middle. She was very involved in service. She made me come here with four girls in a room. And I'm scared to death, but I did it anyways. And I worked the steps. And, you know, my life changed. You know, I really believe I did steps 1, 2, and 3 that morning on my bathroom floor. But she walked me through everything. We read the book. She took me to the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she said, we will remain in this book the whole entire time. The directions are in here. And if I stay in the book, I got a chance of not killing you. And she was right. And she didn't kill me either. And today I stay in the book, so I don't hurt anybody either. But, you know, I worked the steps, and when I got to step 4, you know, I just did what she told me to do. I didn't really understand any of it. She shared all about, you know, she had me write a list of when I felt powerless, and I was powerless my whole entire life. I was powerless. I felt powerless over everything. And she had me write a list of unmanageability because, see, I didn't have a problem with powerless over alcohol. I had the problem with unmanageability. Now, keep in mind, you know, I'm driving around, not on my cars, you know, I'm sleeping with strangers, I'm hurting myself, I'm doing all kinds of stuff, but I had such a difficulty with that. And she had me listed, and thank God, because I saw the insanity. And, you know, I was sure that God hated me for the things I had done. And I'm so glad that she told me just to believe because she believed. I could use her God. You know, I could use her God. Group of drunks, you know. Dog. That's God spelled backwards. I had a dog I loved. I called her when she told me to get on my knees in the morning and ask God to help me stay sober. And at the night, thank him. And I called her up and I said, I can't do it. And she said, why? And I said, because the dog's looking at me. And she said, Robin, that dog has watched you do things. And the dog is very happy you're praying. And so I just kept doing it. I didn't get it. So if you're new, we're not supposed to. I still don't get it. Every year I go, wow, I don't get it. But it works. And that's really all I need to know is there is a God. It's not me. I don't need to understand. I just need to work the rest of the steps. And that's what she told me. When you take this little prayer with me, which I'm thinking, you want to pray with me on our knees? I mean, come on, this is weird. But I did it anyways. She said, all you are doing is making a decision to work the rest of the steps, and I promise you'll be contacted. And she was right. I worked the rest of the steps, and through you, I was contacted. And, you know, I did my step four. I didn't get it. I just did it. I didn't need to understand. I just did it. And I did my step five with her. And I didn't get it. I didn't get it. But then she said, Robin, let's do six. You'll go home and do seven. I recommend we do eight because you are a procrastinator and you don't get it. And I'd like to help you get it. Now that is scary, okay, because she did help me get it. She said, I want you to write down a few of your character defects. And I said, sure, not a problem. I'm loud. I'm very hard on myself. You know, I got 800 pages of people I'm mad at, you know, and I just didn't get it. And she said, let me help you. And I said, okay. She said, you're vindictive, you're selfish, you're a slut, you're a terrible daughter, an awful friend, a terrible employee. I mean, she just went on and on and on, and I got it. And I had a spiritual awakening at that moment. And then she said when she was done, and Robin, I am too. I am too. But I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I worked the 12 steps, and my life changed. And today I am a good mother, a good daughter, a good employee, all of these things. She gave me hope, but I first had to become aware, and she changed my life. I was on a journey to change all of those things, to become a woman with dignity. And, you know, we did all the way up to eight. She said I was a procrastinator, and she said, and I would justify everything. And so she had my list, and I went about making amends to people. And, you know, amends are not about I'm sorry, because I have been sorry. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I won't do it again, and I do it again. And so it was about making changes, and I went to the people I loved because those were the people I hurt most, and I told them, this is what I did to you. What can I do to make it up? And I had to, like, be quiet, make it up to you. And do you want to know that most of those people I loved looked me in the eye and said, baby, all I want you to do is keep going to those AA meetings and don't ever drink again. And so, you know, my amends I make to the people I love on a daily basis is I just don't drink one day at a time. And, you know, 10, I do every day. 1, I do all these things every day. This is a daily deal. And, you know, I already know if I don't stay in the middle, I will disappoint those people because I will drink again. And I don't know if I have another recovery left in me either. And then, you know, there was another thing my sponsor told me to do, and that was to stay away from men. Now, I know that that is a direction I often give, and nobody listens. But for some reason, I listened to that woman, and I kept working on myself. She said she wanted me to write a list of 10 qualities that I wanted in a man. I did. And then she said, become them. Ooh. You attract what you are. She said, you become those qualities that you have made for Superman. You become those, and you will attract him. And, you know, I am so grateful that I took the time to get to know myself, because she said, Robin, if you start with the man thing, I guarantee you will screw every one of them in here. And she said, and you will drink. That's what will happen to you. You will drink. And I'm just so glad I listened. Well, my knight in shining armor, I found out he was in the first 30 days, because it said. And I went to a meeting today, and I saw a boy named Brian. He was a man named Brian. And, you know, he was a guy that ran all over and slept with all of you. I go to meetings, and I'm like, saw five of them last night. And, you know, and he had whatever experience happened in his life, and, you know, we met, and he asked me out, and I said no, and then he asked me out again, and I said no, and then he asked me out again, and I said no, and no one had ever told him no, and I was the girl for him. And, you know, we got to know each other, and I did everything different. And I had looked at, I had had so many men in my life that loved me, but I did not want them, because there must be something wrong if they love me. And then I had a lot of men that didn't love me, and I love them. And what I saw is those men said to me, you aren't my kind of girl, because I drank too much, and I'm looking for a good time. And my job was to prove to them that I was their girl. And I also found out I was never myself with those men. And so what I did is I learned how to be me. And if you liked me, great. And if you didn't, that was okay. And we fell in love in AA, and we got married. And if I could do it all over again, I would do it different. I would do it different. I would have took more time. But, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm in a hurry. I know what the hell's best. There was a lady sponsoring me, and she said, honey, I think you're in a hurry. And I said, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Thanks so much. And I put on the white dress, and we got married. And, you know, Lee, how long do I have? Oh, God, I can get a bunch of stories in that time. But anyways, we got married, and, you know, he is very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am forever grateful for that. That was one of the qualities I needed in a man, because I knew if I was not in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would drink again. And I could not have a man at home saying to me, why the hell are you going to those meetings all the time? I needed somebody that was Adam. And so I got very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I go to meetings all the time because I want to, not because I have to. I want to be there because there was somebody there before me. I want to be there because you guys saved my dad's life. You know, he died sober. I want to be there because I know if shaking runs in my family, alcoholism runs in my family, and my nieces and nephews will need you. I know that. And so I want to be here. But the reason I really want to be here is I'm selfish. I'm selfish. I do not want to get drunk again, you know. And also, in addition to that, I get the opportunity to work with other women. And for that, my life has changed. You know, every time I get a girl, I go, oh, my God, what character defect am I going to be working on now? Because she's in life form. And I have several. They have their own names. I'm controlling. I'm bossy. I'm the procrastinator. I got one show that says, it's me, the procrastinator. But they have changed my life. And when I first got sober and was working with girls, I used to pick them up and buy them clothes and take them shopping and, you know, get mattresses out of dumpsters. And I did all kinds of crazy things that you are not supposed to do. Of course, I never called my sponsor for direction on sponsorship. Why would I do that? So, you know, I've learned the hard way. But my husband was a big AA book thumper, and I mean serious, and he was mean. He was mean to his guys. I felt so sorry for him. And, you know, he has changed me and helped me, and my sponsor has changed and helped me to work the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and to work the program. And I have a little bit more structure now. And I am not getting mattresses out of dumpsters, I promise you. I am not afraid to hurt your feelings. I am more concerned about your life. Because this is a deadly disease that will kill you. And if you stay, you have a great opportunity to have a wonderful life. And I want you to have it if you can. But I can't make you have it, and I can't get you sober. The first 2 years were great. Everything was great, and I kept observing women and watching them go through tragedies and things happening, and I knew it was going to come. Because life is life. And my sponsor told me, I am not going to promise you a rose garden, baby. And I got a phone call one day, and it was my sister-in-law, and she had called to tell me that my brother had been They were wrestling, her son and my brother, her stepson, and that he was dead. And what I later found out is they were drinking, and they were brawling, and he killed them. And my niece, the one I love and adore, was there to witness it. And I can tell you that I'm so glad I'm in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that night I heard a voice that said, no matter what, don't drink. And I don't know who the hell that was, if it was God, if it was him, I don't know. I don't know who it was, but all I know is I heard it. And I got up that morning, and my husband looked at me, and I said, I got to go to a meeting. And he said, yes, you do. And I went to a meeting, and I talked about it, and people came up and hugged me and told me they loved me, and that I was going to be okay. And I remember Lee. He said, remember, no matter what, we don't drink. And I can tell you that I didn't have to drink. And remember, sometimes my worst days of my life become my greatest. Because on that day, when I went and I was a part of my family, I suited up and showed up. I had a smile on my face. I asked what I could do to help them. I didn't say, oh, my brother's been killed. I said to my mom, what can I do? To my sister-in-law, who I wasn't real sure what was going on there, is there anything I can do? I didn't get drunk and whine about me. I showed up as a lady with dignity. I got to be a girl that my dad looked down from heaven, and when he saw his family falling apart, I was there as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and a lady and a daughter with dignity. Alcoholics Anonymous had given me that. I didn't get that anywhere but here. And, you know, that has been a tragic thing that continues in my life, but I just share about it. And I've helped people and I didn't even know I was helping them, because no matter what I go through, I just don't drink. You know, I got to do all kinds of other stuff, but drinking is not an answer. And I survived that. And I had a sponsor that told me to throw plates, a sponsor that told me it is none of my business what the court system decides to do. I have this niece I love, and I lost her. I lost her because it became Jerry Springer special, and, you know, they took her away and whatever. And, you know, I had to go with that loss of being able to say, you know, I'm hurting her by making her be a part of my life. And, you know, and then the next year my marriage fell apart. You know, I looked at this man that I was married to, and he looked at me, and we hated each other. And we were going to the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we looked like this great, happy couple. And we were going home and brawling. We were brawling. And I started to do some thinking. You know, they say, nah, you can think whatever you want, but you just don't necessarily do it. Well, I was thinking about maybe shooting them. I was. And I saw a hammer one time, and I walked by it, and I thought, I'm going to beat the hell out of him with that. I went to a woman's meeting, and I announced that, and they looked kind of scared. There was a guy there, and he was nervous. But something was wrong. Something was wrong. And I was going to meetings, talking to my sponsor, working my steps, working with girls, and something was wrong. And I called my sponsor, and I said, I got to tell you something. And I said, my marriage is falling apart. I'm thinking of killing my husband. And she said, Jesus Christ, Robin, get some help. And so I got some help. And, you know, what I learned from that experience is I got a bad picker. But there's nothing wrong with my husband. It's me, because I pick you expecting you to fix me. I got this hole in my soul that I keep trying to fix with other things, especially men, too. And I was expecting him to fix me. And he isn't capable of fixing me. And, you know, I called that man my dad probably at least once or twice a week for the years we were married. You know, every day I said, yeah, Bill, whatever, Bill. Don't talk to me like Bill. I will not be like my mother, Bill. You know, his name is not Bill, and he is not my father. You know, and my marriage is good today. And so sometimes the worst things that happen to me end up being the greatest things that happen to me, because I have had an opportunity to share with other women my struggles of my marriage. Share with other women that I may be at AA, but sometimes my home life is not looking real good. And that he goes the same meeting, so it's real hard for me to say, you know, the son of a bitch, he's over there, by the way, you know, did this and this. And so I share about it now, though, and, you know, I used to get really mad at him because we'd get in a big brawl, and, And he would say, I'm going to a meeting. And I would think, our marriage has fallen apart and you're going to a meeting? He was doing what his sponsor told him. Anything you put before AA and God, you will lose anyways. And so he did what he had to do. I found a wonderful counselor that helped change my life. I am so glad to know today my troubles are of my own making. It is not necessary for me to shout through the hilltops about what an asshole you are. It is my job to continue working on me. And, you know, unfortunately for my husband, I had not resolved the issues I had with my father, and I was determined to make him make me whole. And my dad was not responsible for making me whole, and my husband wasn't responsible. The one that is responsible is for me, and all I need to do is seek, and that is seek God. And I've learned to seek God through you. You talk to me. God doesn't really talk to me. You know, and my life is so different today. I have wonderful women in my life that I love. I'm 6 years sober, standing up in front of I don't know how many women. I mean, who would have ever thought? Who would ever thought? And my primary purpose today is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. I am to be of maximum service to God and His children. You know, I am to just try one day at a time, you know. I hope that when I'm 80, I'm standing up here. And if I am, I'm going to have a box, I'm going to have on platform shoes, and I'm going to have on a mini skirt. And I'd like to end with my favorite reading, and then I'll let you all get on your way. And this comes from Keys to the Kingdom, and it's my favorite. And it's my favorite when I'm sad. It's my favorite when I'm happy. It just reminds me of what AA is. And it says, AA is not a plan of recovery that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life, and the challenges contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he lives. We do not and cannot outgrow this plan. My nose is snotting, scary. As arrested alcoholics, we must have a program for living that allows for limitless expansion. Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential for maintaining our arrestment. Others may idle in retrogressive groove without too much danger, but retrogression can spell death for us. However, it isn't as rough as it sounds. As we do become grateful for the necessity that makes us toe the line, and we find that we are compensated for a consistent effort by the countless dividends we receive, a complete change takes place in our approach to life. Where we used to run from responsibility, we find ourselves accepting it with gratitude that we can successfully shoulder it. Instead of wanting to escape some perplexing problem, we experience the thrill of the challenge and the opportunity it affords for another application of AA's techniques. We find ourselves tackling it with surprising vigor. And this lady writes, the last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, disappointments, because that's life. But also I've known a great deal of joy and a peace that is handmaiden and an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of friendship. For to these people I am truly related, first through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experience with one another, and sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love, without strings, without obligations, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. The ache is gone and never need return. And now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted, needed, and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we've been given the keys to the kingdom. Thank you.